This is Floss Weekly with Simon Phipps standing in for an unfortunately indisposed Randall Schwartz. I'm going to be joined by Jonathan Bennett, and we're going to be talking about something called Viper Builder, which is an iOS library for, well, implementing some kind of an architecture. We definitely don't want to miss it, and I'm pretty sure you don't want to either. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Simon Phipps and Jonathan Bennett. Episode 476, recorded March 21st, 2018. Viper Builder.
This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/floss.
Hi, it's Simon Phipps standing in for Randall Schwartz, and this is Floss Weekly. My delightful co-host Jonathan Bennett is joining me this week, and our guest is a thing called Viper Builder, which appears to be a framework for writing iOS apps using some funky new pattern for developing apps. Jonathan, do you know anything about this?
I don't. I know writing iOS apps can be a pain, and I'm super interested to see if they've made that any easier. But I'm more of an Android developer. I haven't done much of iOS. But you know, we've got the experts here in a minute. We can figure out what exactly they're doing.
Absolutely. Well, it's a great shame that Randall was unable to be here. It was a dodgy taco down in Tijuana has put him out of action. And so I hope he's going to be back again next week. But Jonathan and I both admit to being completely in the dark about iOS development. So this is 100% educational for us. Now, before we bring on our guests, Jonathan has got a message for us.
Yes, I want to let everyone know that this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. The mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. It was dated, and it needed a client-focused technological revolution. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in just seconds. Based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/floss. That's rocketmortgage.com/FLOSS. Rocket Mortgage is an equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
So let's go right ahead and bring on our guests. We have Mike McDougall and Chris Arnold, who are here to talk about Viper Builder. Mike, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's really great to have a guest whose name I can read and be reasonably confident that I'm getting it right. So you're very welcome to the show. So Viper Builder, you've got two presenters who are utter iOS virgins. Tell us what we need to know.
Awesome. So stepping back a bit. So Viper's design pattern's been around for a little bit. It's essentially aiming to separate the concerns of a really complicated set of logic. You know, you're building an app, you have a ton of view logic, ton of business logic. Vipers are there for providing structure where to actually put your code. And as with many things in engineering, it's also an acronym. So Viper stands for a view, interactor, presenter, entity, and router. So view is pretty straightforward. It's a thing that actually is presented on screen for the user. And E, the entity, is also pretty straightforward in that a lot of other design patterns usually refer to it as a model or, you know, a data object that is holding all the necessary data, maybe from the API or something. So that really leaves us with the three remaining pieces and that's the interactor, the presenter, and the router. So the interactor's job is really all of the complicated logic. That's usually where it lives, like the business logic. So things like networking, maybe sorting. Whereas the presenter's job is kind of the opposite. It only deals with the view itself. So usually it's up to the presenter to take the information from the interactor and then turn it to a view model and then actually present it on screen for the user. And lastly is the router. In iOS development, obviously when we're building out a feature or a set of features in our app, it's many screens. It's not a single screen. So the router's main responsibility is to handle all of that navigation. If you look at it as a single Viper installation for each screen, the router is the thing that would link all of those installations together. So it's kind of a general idea of Viper itself. And as you can probably tell, there are a lot of moving pieces to Viper, a lot of classes, a lot of things to manage. And through our investigation and various features in our apps, initially, we realized there's a lot of boilerplate, a lot of overhead, a huge learning curve. But we saw the flexibility and it had the right level of flexibility and structure for us. So we wanted to build a layer on top of it that would make all these – that would hopefully detract from these negatives a bit. So that's kind of where Viper Builder comes in, providing that thin layer of support to make the boilerplate and just make it less complicated.
Right. So we should probably bring Chris in as well. So welcome to the show, Chris. It's good to have you here. I was going to ask you, Viper Builder – I had a little look around. This doesn't look like it's the only Viper library for iOS. What makes it special?
I think what makes it special, I have to admit, I haven't looked at every Viper library for iOS that's out there. But we tried to make this something that we could use in-house, and we thought it would be useful for people out of house as well. So we think it's simple and straightforward. It's not a ton of code. It's kind of some of the scaffolding you need, but it doesn't do everything for you. And then we also built it so it works with both Swift and Objective-C. So those are two nice features about it. But again, I can't say I've looked at all the other Viper libraries out there.
Right. And so do you both work for Etsy, or are you community members, or what's your link with the project?
Yeah, we both work for Etsy.
You both work for Etsy. Oh, cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. So is Etsy using this? I assume you are.
We are, yes.
And what sort of cool stuff have you built with it, Mike?
Awesome. So the first feature we did was our shop settings. So allowing sellers to like change things about their shop, their title, their announcement, various things. That was completely built with Viper. Our listing manager, which is our most critical feature for sellers, is also built completely with Viper as well. Lots of exciting things. And Chris could probably talk to more about the buyer side of things.
Good, Chris.
Mike works on the buyer side of things mostly, or the seller side of things mostly. I work mostly on the buyer side of things. We have two different apps. So on the buyer side of things, we have a bunch of screens built with Viper, including our cart. We have an experimental screen that users see when they go to search, and that is built with Viper as well.
Right. So I'm just looking at the GitHub project here. Do you work from GitHub, or is what's on GitHub an export of what you're using internally?
So it's what we're actually using internally. When we started the project, it was initially a private GitHub repo, but once we moved to open source, we deleted the private repo, so we're working directly from public.
Right. So my concern there is I only see you as a committer, as it turns out, Mike. So there doesn't seem to be anybody else working on it. And so that's usually a good sign somebody has thrown it over the wall and is actually working on a different repo. But that's not what's going on here.
No. So the private repo had a few more contributors, but we squashed it down to a single commit when we moved it to public.
Right. And when was that? When did it go to public?
That was December, I believe.
Okay. Interesting. And so looking at this, what has that replaced from what you were using before? Were you handcrafting all of this Viper stuff before, or was it a different architecture before that you were using for your iOS apps?
So we so typically this is actually kind of where the birthplace of Viper and Viper Builder for us was. We didn't really have a good practice for using a design pattern throughout the app. We kind of did it on an ad hoc basis, which is less than great. It made it difficult to kind of switch between features and or develop between features. So, you know, we sat down and we're like, we had a formal architecture review, which is kind of a process we have at Etsy to go through any large architecture changes and decide, hey, you know, if we want to move forward with a consistent design pattern, is Viper the right thing? And the outcome is essentially, yeah, we need to move forward with Viper, or that it was okay to move forward with Viper, and we'll use Viper Builder to make it easier.
Right. So what was the inspiration for creating the Viper Builder project, would you say? What was the seed that made you want to create an open source project?
Chris, you want to fill that one?
Well, sure. I think a lot of it is Etsy has a history of contributing to open source, and we like to give back to the community. We have not done anything from the iOS side before in terms of open source. So I think we saw this as a good opportunity to say, hey, like, we use a lot of open source in our iOS app, and we've written this thing to help us create Viper screens in the app. Let's see if we can give that back. Let's see if we can share.
Right, right. And so how would you say this compares with other open source communities that you're involved in? Because, you know, the Apple ecosystem is not one that's renowned for being one for rich, vibrant open source communities, in my experience. How's it working out?
Absolutely. It's different, a little different when you develop in iOS. After the Apple opened the iPhone SDK, there have been a lot of open source libraries that have come about, and a lot of them, you know, we use a lot of them. A lot of developers decided they wanted to share libraries, and Apple has no part in that, or had no part in that. And the community really built up all the tools for sharing these libraries and managing libraries. There are a couple of community-based package managers. One is called CocoaPods, which is the most popular one. One is called Carthage. And when you're working with something like, say, PHP, which we do a lot of at Etsy, the language is open source and the package manager is open source, and they're kind of, they work together. But here, it's very much like Apple gives you its closed source libraries, you develop with them, and when you want to add on to them, and when anyone in the community wants to add on to them, they need to go to the open source side of things, and the community is dealing with the packages and the management there. Now, that's changed a little bit because Apple has something called Swift Package Manager, which they've released. If you have an app that's not 100% Swift, you probably don't want to use that yet. So that's one way open source is different in iOS. Another way is you have to think about the fact that your app is closed source, so you need to be very careful. Well, most apps are closed source. You need to be very careful about what licenses you're picking, because if you pick certain licenses, you might be required to open source your entire app, and in many cases, you don't want to do that. And then another thing is, like, your license requirements probably say your licenses need to be bundled with your software, and so we actually have a part in our app where you can tap in and you can see all the licenses for all the open source we use. And conveniently, we use an open source library to create that ourselves.
That's interesting. Hey, I wanted to ask a couple of questions. When someone uses Viper Builder for an iOS app, are they giving anything up? Is there any loss of flexibility? Or is this just entirely making things easier to get at?
Right. So, I mean, this is something that we tossed and turned over throughout the architecture review process. Like, what's the right level of flexibility? And, you know, is it a spectrum on the way to structured? And, you know, one of the things that came up constantly was, like, we don't want to be walled into a particular design pattern, because then what happens when you come up with an exception, a feature that doesn't work in that design pattern? then we have to build something else or hack in something, and that's no fun. So we really built Viper with flexibility, or Viper Builder with flexibility in mind. You can, I mean, you can break the walls of those classes I mentioned before, but it's just advised against, because then you'd be breaking the design pattern. But you know, we do give good documentation on, you know, where your code should live, where certain types of code should live, to kind of like guide you in the right direction. But there's definitely not so much structure there.
And so Chris was just asking about the or mentioning the potential issues with some of the open source licenses and the iOS store. What license did you guys choose for Viper Builder and why?
Right. So we went with Apache 2.0. And that was, it just seemed like the standard. We were obviously talking with lawyers at Etsy with open sourcing and everything. But it did seem like the standard amongst the CocoaPods was between MIT and Apache 2.0. Talking with legal, we decided to go with Apache 2.0.
And since this has gone open, do you guys know of any outside apps that are taking advantage of it and using Viper Builder?
So CocoaPods does give us some statistics every time a user were to install. And we do see some installs. We don't know which apps are installed. I think that's hidden from us. But out there somewhere.
So not a whole lot of information about it. Do you know of any in particular where, you know, app XYZ is making use of Viper Builder?
No, unfortunately, other than the R2 Etsy and Celon Etsy apps, and we don't really have too much insight to that yet.
Ah, okay. And so that is why you're on a show like Floss Weekly, to get the word out about Viper Builder.
Exactly.
Have there been any notable roadblocks or technical problems that have just been interesting to come up with solutions for?
Yeah, so one in particular. So when we were originally developing Viper Builder, we were building completely in Swift, and mind our code base is not completely Swift. We have a majority of Objective-C, and new things are being written in Swift. So yeah, we were building Viper Builder in Swift, and with this idea of having three parent classes and then subclassing them, so you can build in your own functionality, and that's kind of where the flexibility comes in. However, we realized a bit late that you can't actually subclass Swift parent classes in Objective-C. So yeah, we had to rework a few of the classes into Objective-C, and that's why the Viper Builder code base is half and half, and also there are tests for both cases.
Interesting. So the flexibility of being able to use either Objective-C or Swift, is that something that you guys in the projects you take advantage of?
Yeah, so we have a few screens that use the ones I mentioned before. Those all use the Swift version, I believe. But yeah, there are definitely a few that use Objective-C as well. And that was kind of one of the points that we were considering when building this. We want to support the ability to refactor old screens that maybe might be in Objective-C using Viper Builder.
I know that when, well, Android development and iOS development, they kind of have the same the user interface goals for the development. So obviously they want to make it in the IDE as easy as possible. So you've got Google Studio, and then on the other side you've got Apple's Xcode, I think they call it. Is Viper Builder integrated into Xcode so that it's, you know, you have all of the fancy code completion and those tools?
Right. So So once you install Viper Builder as a using the CocoaPod dependency manager, you'll get the nice code completion as you would with any open source or third party framework. And I mean, we were definitely looking into potentially like adding in some template Xcode templates, so you can kind of maybe get some boilerplate right off the bat to see how you could use it.
Boilerplate for the library that reduces the amount of boilerplate that you need.
Right.
So what does that look like? How much boilerplate reduction are we talking about?
So I think it's, if you talk about a single screen, it's probably not a ton of boilerplate, you know, probably like 30 or so lines. However, the issue is when you are using this design pattern across many screens, there's going to be more boilerplate. So we wanted to cut it down as much as possible with Viper Builder. And again, it doesn't take out all of the pieces that are required to build with Viper, but it takes out most of them, so you can deal with your interactive presenter and router.
So Viper is one of the ideas for development. Are there some other similar patterns and ideas that you guys looked at and decided not to use?
There are indeed. And this is actually an ongoing discussion in the iOS development community. You'll get people who say that Model View Controller is the best. And that's kind of what Apple, I don't want to say pushes you towards, but provides a lot of tools for initially when you start your development. You'll get people who say a different pattern called Model View View Model is workable. And you'll get people who also say, like, anyone who does Model View Controller is just going to end up with massive view controllers. That's the joke when it comes to Model View Controller on iOS. And that's one of the things all the other patterns are trying to eliminate. And finally, you'll get people who say, oh, you don't worry about Massive View Controllers. They won't happen if you do MVC right. And different people have all sorts of blog posts about the right way to do architecture in iOS. So we certainly looked at other patterns. We have a lot of screens that are already in Model View Controller, and some have succumbed to this Massive View Controller problem, and we've refactored some of them. We have also looked at Model View View Model, and that kind of lets you have a specific class, this View Model, that takes data from your model and transforms it as necessary for display in your view, without having to shove all that code inside your controller. So that takes part of the controller logic and moves it somewhere else. So as an example, like if your model sends down data that represents a date or a time in epoch seconds, your view model would be the thing that transforms it into a human readable date using a date format or something like that. And so we looked at Model View View Model, but we saw that it reduced the kind of massive view controller problem a little, but we wanted to do more in terms of reducing that and splitting out the responsibility. So that's why we went with Viper Builder, or Viper as a pattern, I should say.
And then Viper Builder, is there a test suite for this? Is there some way of automated testing, or do you guys do testing by hand? How do you make sure you don't break things as you add new features?
Right. So as we're developing it, I definitely wanted to use the leverage Travis CI. At Etsy, we have a culture of continuous integration, continuous deployment, and we wanted Viper Builder to be no different. So we wanted to use Travis CI. We wanted to use CodeCov, which are both continuous integration tools that will build your tool or app, and then CodeCov, which will actually run your suite of tests and report back a code coverage as a little badge on your GitHub page. So yeah, every time a commit or a pull request is either pushed or opened, a build will be kicked off in Travis CI, which if you're not familiar with Travis CI, it's a continuous integration suite that integrates with GitHub. And kind of the difference with iOS development is that it can't run on a Linux box. So Travis CI has a bunch of macOS boxes running Xcode, building all of the open source projects and reporting back when done.
Yes, this is one of the things that annoys me very much about trying to do iOS development. You can do Android development on a Mac, but you cannot do iOS development on a Linux PC. Yep. So do you actually have a test suite that does things like, so say we build the app and then we simulate user input and make sure that the user input is interpreted the way that it should be. Do you get down to that level of the nitty-gritty to make sure that things work as expected?
So currently we have a suite of unit tests only, no functional tests, because we want to kind of like leave that up to the developer. Because again, we're not really interacting, or we don't intercept the user interaction directly. That's kind of up to the implementer.
And do you have kind of a feeling as to like what percentage of the code you have covered by these tests?
So according to CodeCov, we have 100% in both Objective-C and Swift.
Actual true 100% coverage. That sir is impressive if that is accurate.
it took a lot of work to get to that point. Granted, there are a lot of generated files from things like CocoaPods that we had to ignore, but the code we actually wrote is tested.
Bravo.
So I've been looking around on the web at some of your websites. You've got a very pretty blog up there, which I think that our viewers and listeners will probably want to go read later. I noticed that you have an I.O. page on GitHub with a whole range of other projects. Are you involved in any of those projects as well? I see you've got something called Hound and something called StatsD. Any of those your projects too?
No, so we have used those, but no, we're not involved with those projects.
Right. And so inside Etsy, do you have a culture of open source? Do you have a commitment to doing things as open source, or is this more of a convenience and an accident that you're doing Viper Builder as open source?
You want to feel that, Chris?
Sure. I'd say we have a commitment to open source in many ways, and we like to give back and share with the community. And I'll mention like Hound and StatsD, which you called out there, are internal tools that we use all the time, and we definitely wanted to share them with the world and the community. That said, like Etsy has been around for, 12 years now, and we put a lot of open source out there. And sometimes it gets hard to maintain over the years. So not everything on that page is as fresh as it could be, especially given Etsy's renewed kind of focus on e-commerce in the last year or so. But we do like to give back to the community.
Right. So that's a fairly common pattern that I'm seeing in quite a few companies is to have the internal tools go out. Do you actually have an open source officer or an open source office at Etsy, or is this all on a case-by-case basis by your engineering teams?
We have a group. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, so we have a Google group essentially that has a few people that have open source previously and that are just interested in open source, and we just fill out a form saying like this is a thing that we're using internally and we think it's a good candidate for open sourcing, and then we get the feedback on it from all the engineers at the company, and hopefully a thumbs up at the end.
Right, that's cool stuff. And has it ever concerned you at all the alleged incompatibility between the Apple Store and open source projects? Has that been something you've had to take into account as you've been open sourcing these things?
I don't think so. There's many other CocoaPods, much larger than Viper Builder, that are around, and they usually don't build in any things to worry about that.
Right. So is Viper a design pattern? It is a design pattern like MVC. Is it something that you're using across all of your mobile development, or has iOS become something of a design silo?
So we've definitely talked about potentially using this cross-platform. But one interesting thing is that, Android has its own set of problems, and iOS has its own set of problems. I'm not sure Viper solves all of the ones that they do on iOS on Android. So they're definitely going through an AR process right now, architecture review process right now. So hopefully they will come out with maybe Viper, maybe something else.
Right. So is there a very much shared code between? Presumably you have Android apps. Is there shared code? Mm-hmm.
We do not share code between our apps, really. I can note that both on the Android side and the iOS side, we have code that looks at our API endpoints and generates model objects, which we can then stick in the apps. So that's not exactly sharing code, but that is a way of making sure our code is in sync between our APIs and our mobile clients.
Right. And then going back, presumably, all these mobile apps are really just the tip of the iceberg poking through the water for what's on your servers behind. So, is that all open source code as well?
It is not. Our all of our business logic. I don't know how many people would be actually be interested in our business logic, but our business logic for like showing an Etsy listing or letting a seller edit the price of a listing is not open source. Again, I don't know who'd be interested because everyone would need to customize it for their own needs. But we do try to take small pieces of our internal code, like StatsD and like Deployinator, which is another interesting tool from Etsy, mm-hmm. and make them available for other people to use because we think others would be interested in that sort of functionality.
Right. Yeah, I just saw Deployinator on your GitHub site there. What is that? Is it looks like it's a deployment framework of some kind.
Yeah. So we use Deployinator every day to do our web pushes. And the idea is we have, you know, 100 plus engineers and we want to make changes to the website and we want to do it not in a way where we're releasing a new website every month or something. Like I worked at a financial company years ago and we'd do like one release a month and it had to be after trading hours. And like we'd stay in the office till 1 a.m. making sure everything worked. Etsy is very different when it comes to deployment. So when we want to make changes to the website, the idea is make small changes, make them quickly, and put them behind branching logic, which we call feature flags, to turn them on and off when we need to. So the idea is web engineers at Etsy will deploy many times a day. And when you're doing that sort of deployment, you need a lot of coordination happening. So Deployinator is one way we get those changes out, is the way, I should say, we get those changes out from our development systems to our staging and production systems.
Right. So now I had loads of fun running open source at some microsystems last decade, and I know that the first thing that happens when you want to make something open source is the sky darkens with lawyers. How have you got on with your legal department in making all this stuff go open source? Has it been really easy sailing?
Honestly, it's been so easy. I think at one point when I reached out to our open source working group, it was something like, you know, this project's great, you know, let's move forward with it, and then let's loop in lawyers to make sure everything checks out. And we had to do a little last minute renaming, but other than that, it was smooth sailing.
Yeah, the renaming is really tricky. I was always taught to name things after geographical features because you can't trademark those, although we managed it with Java somehow. So I'm really pleased to hear that you had a good time doing that. And then how about community? How well have you been received in the community as a corporate entity? Because again, some corporations find that people outside their circle treat them with suspicion.
So, I mean, at least in regards to Viper Builder, we've gotten a few positive comments on the Coders Craft article. I've gotten some feedback on the some good feedback on the repo as well. And then outside of Viper Builder, I think there are like projects like Deployinator and Hound and StatsD. Like those are very well received, and I know people use them in real apps or real websites.
To follow up on that. With Viper Builder, what would you like to see from the community? Is there a need that our listeners can think about trying to meet for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely love to see some issues opened. Find all the bugs and issues you can. Definitely interested to know if our level of flexibility versus structure is good, or if there needs to be more structure, more flexibility, and just how it feels to actually use it. If it feels weird or you know any. Anti-pattern for your app, definitely let us know and we can consider it.
So at this point, there aren't any outstanding issues that people need to take a look at. It's more, it just needs to be beat upon to find any problems?
Exactly.
Okay, well, a perfect follow-up to that is, what does it look like for someone to get started? You know, if I decide I want to build an iOS app using Viper Builder, what do the steps look like to get going on that?
Right. Yeah, so it's pretty straightforward. If you've never built an iOS app before that uses third-party code, it would just be a matter of creating your iOS app in Xcode. And then you'd have to install CocoaPods, which is I think you can do through Brew as well. And then I think you can run like a pod init command line, and that'll give you essentially a file where you can specify all your dependencies and just list Viper Builder as one of them. Run one more command, and you're pretty much set and ready to go.
Well, that's all been fascinating stuff. So my apologies that Jonathan and I aren't able to take your part on all of the iOS details and specifics here. It's been a while since I even touched an iOS device, I have to admit to you.
Last time I touched it, I made sure and washed my hands afterwards.
I wasn't going to say that, but, you know. It is contractually required to ask a couple of questions to both Mike and Chris. So the first question I've got to ask for you is what your favorite scripting language is.
I'll go with PHP.
I'm going to say Perl. I started out my career with Perl, and I have a lot of fond feelings about it.
Yeah, you win.
I hope you're listening, Randall. I hope you're listening.
You win the Randall Schwartz Rehabilitation Prize. Okay. And then the second question is about editors. If I was to give you a config file to edit, which editor would you rather use?
I can't say Xcode Vim.
Vim as well.
Vim. I see. You win some, you lose some. This is good. So is there anything that we've forgotten to ask you? Because we're very forgetful. Is there any last message you'd like to give people? Do you want to tell people where they should go to check things out? Your last words, Mike.
Cool. Yeah. Just definitely check out the GitHub repo. Look through the code. Try it out in your app. Tell us if it works or if it doesn't.
Excellent. We'll make sure that the references are on the webpage at twit.tv. So thank you very much indeed, Mike and Chris, for coming and being interviewed by us. I don't know how to really put it. Free software geeks. Delightful to have you along. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
So tell me, Jonathan, what do you think of all that stuff?
I think it's really neat when a company like Etsy has all of these internal problems that they write their own code to solve. And then they look at the code that they just wrote and they said, this doesn't really give us any type of huge business advantage. This code isn't something that has to stay proprietary for whatever reason. Let's open source it and throw it out there and see if people do anything interesting with it. I think that's amazing when that happens. And it sounds like, as a company as a whole, Etsy is trying to do that. I think that's really great. It'll be interesting to watch specifically Viper Builder, but the rest of their projects, to see if they are things that, the larger community sees and jumps on board with and really starts taking advantage of and using.
Yep. Well, I think that was my takeaway as well. I'm very pleased indeed to see a company deciding that it's going to take all of its non-differentiating code and make it open source. And I really hope that the result of that is going to be that they're going to have people who are outside their vision coming in and bring innovation into their work and improving their work. They've put it all out there under open licenses that are very relaxed. They're using Apache for Viper Builder. I looked at some of their other stuff. They're using MIT for a lot of their internal tools. So it's all very hands-off. It's all very generous to the outside world. And I think that's something that should be encouraged. And I also learned about Viper. Had you heard of it before, Jonathan?
I've not. Android uses kind of the model view and the controller models. So Viper is definitely a new concept for me. It sounds interesting, though.
Yeah, I did. I read a little bit about it on Medium, and it seemed that it has a reputation for making you write lots of unnecessary code and lots of make weight template code. So it'll be great for anyone who programs in Java.
It's too bad that, nobody writes a library that takes care of all that boilerplate code for you.
Well, hey, wouldn't it be cool if somebody did that and maybe open sourced it?
Yeah.
That would be really great. All right. Well, if Randall was here, he would be telling you about the shows that are coming up in the near future. So I'm going to have a go at doing that too. If ever you want to find out about the shows that are coming up, if you go to twit.tv/floss, you'll find that there is a link to the spreadsheet that's got all the upcoming guests. We have got Rust appearing on the show next week. We have OWASP on the week after that. We have a guest who we've been following for a long time talking about libpurple and Pidgin and game, and that will be fascinating to find out whether instant messaging is still a thing. We have Univention coming up after that. Univention have got a Linux distro that's got everything you need to run an educational facility on it, and that's going to be a fascinating show. And then there's something called Chomper coming up on April 25th. So that all looks like a fascinating bunch of programs. If you've got a project that you would like to see on Floss Weekly, then again, visit the page at twit.tv/floss, and you'll find instructions on how to send Randall an email to link him up with your project leader and get the project added to the spreadsheet for the schedule for the future. It's then traditional for us to plug stuff. And so, Jonathan, please, do you have stuff to plug?
The only thing I have to plug for today is follow me on Twitter at JP_Bennett and catch my occasional tech musings and even more occasional political musings. I try to keep my nose out of trouble on that one as much as possible, though.
I've heard of people like you who try and stay out of political things, but we could talk about this.
Let's not. So
as for me, I'd love for folk to follow me on Twitter, where I am Webmink, WebMink, and I'm Webmink in lots of other places as well. You'll find me on Google Plus. You'll find me hanging out on all sorts of legacy websites like Google Plus. In terms of things that I want to plug, we have a conference coming up in the UK called OGCamp, which is coming up in the summer. And if you are anywhere in Western Europe, I would really like you to buy a ticket and come along to OGCamp in August in Sheffield. Go to the OGCamp website, oggcamp.io or .com, or I think we've bought all the domains, and take a look at that. I'm also hoping that I might show up at OSCON. I'm pretty sure Randall is going to be there. If you'd like your project to be interviewed at OSCON, get in touch with Randall and let him know that you're going to be at the show. I'm also hopefully going to be going to this year's LibreOffice conference, which is why I'm wearing the T-shirt. This year's LibreOffice conference is in a country I've never been to before. It's in Albania, in their capital city of Tirana. Albania is a hot, up-and-coming, free and open-source software country with a young and vibrant open-source development community. And I think you're going to really want to check that out and try a new culture that you've never tried before. Jonathan, any last words before we sign out?
I'll just say that it's been a blast to co-host with you. And I'm sure everybody appreciates your last moment stepping in as Randall is suddenly out of pocket, so thank you for that.
Yeah, people who weren't here during the warm-up won't know that I also didn't realize that you had daylight saving time in the US, and so I wasn't expecting to start doing the recording for another 5 minutes. So came into it quite cold. Well, that's all we have time for this week on Floss Weekly. Thank you for tuning in, and tune in again next week for another Floss Weekly super episode with Randall Schwartz.